Hello, I'm your host, Erin Gruwell, and welcome to the Freedom Writers Podcast. Today's show features my conversation with celebrated freedom writer teachers, world-renowned dancers, and hearing-impaired activists, Jill and Amnon Dante, who discuss their innovative techniques for humanity through dance and how they use their platform to advocate for those who are otherly abled. This episode is incredibly insightful and moving, and I hope it will leave you feeling enlightened and empowered to make a difference. In 2015, the U.S. State Department orchestrated a novel partnership with the Freedom Writers Foundation and the American Embassy in Israel and the consulate in East Jerusalem, representing the Palestinian territories. This passion project allowed us to build bridges by hosting a teacher training institute in the Middle East. We had been hosting teacher training institutes in Long Beach for several years and have been thrilled to invite educators from across the globe into our Freedom Writer family. However, we knew that this group of teachers was going to be different from any group before them. So the Freedom Writers and I packed our teaching tools and embarked on the adventure of a lifetime. We flew to Israel, saw the cultural sites there, and prepared for an institute like no other. After spending nearly a week with educators from Israel and the Palestinian territories, the Freedom Writers and I were elated to invite 20 new Middle Eastern educators into the Freedom Writer fold and began inviting 10 educators a year from that region to join us in Long Beach each summer. Our family has since grown by 50, and we cannot wait to open our doors to more Middle Eastern educators in the years to come. Since our initial trip, the Freedom Writers and I have been lucky enough to return to the Middle East and visit classrooms in both Israel and the Palestinian territories. With each visit, we've become closer and closer to our Middle Eastern brethren and have reveled in the opportunity to work with today's guests, Jill and Amnon Dante. Jill and Amnon have mentored countless students in the art of dance, advocated for the heart of hearing, and acted as cultural ambassadors throughout the world. When we were gathering stories from our Freedom Writer teachers for our new book, Dear Freedom Writer, I was thrilled to learn that they were interested in responding to a letter written by a hearing-impaired student from Tel Aviv. We were even happier to have them join us for the launch of Dear Freedom Writer here in Long Beach in March. Without further ado, here is my conversation with Jill and Amnon Dante. The first time I met the two of you was here at our amazing Freedom Writer office. And we were hosting Israelis and Palestinians who came to America to learn from the Freedom Writers and I our methodology. And I will never forget this Israeli teacher squealing, "Jill and Amnon, they're famous. I've always wanted to meet them." So I knew of your fame before I even met you, based on your reputation. And you walked onto the dance floor and performed, and we all wept. Let's start for those viewers around the world. Why do you think this young woman from Israel put you and your husband on her bucket list to meet?
Well, Amnon was born deaf, and we created a performance that's also a meeting and interactive, that we come to people and we tell our stories, that's called Two Worlds. So Amnon was born deaf, and he's a dancer, and he's an international well-known dancer. And I come from the world of water ballet with dolphins. And when we created this performance, we said every child in Israel has to see it. And we started going to schools and doing the performance. They all come into the worlds of sign language and dance and pantomime and silence and music, everything that we bring, and everybody can relate to it. And so we're in what's called Sal Tarbut. It's like a culture coming into schools. And we come to schools that are religious Jewish, to Arab villages, to schools with special needs, to regular public schools. And I guess they know about us because we come out there, and many times people want us to come to the school and it doesn't always work out. So suddenly we're meeting here in California, which was amazing. And Amnon and I immediately connected to you and your heart and the way you believe and work. What you do is exactly what we feel when we do with dance and movement, and you do it through writing and through play and art. And it just connected to us right away. We came here and we felt at home the minute we were here.
You are at home. And I love that we're both visually recording this and audio recording this, but I'm sad for the audio audience because they can't see Jill signing to Amnon. And that's my favorite part, is sitting and watching you bring words to life for your husband.
So this is interesting because I'm speaking English and I'm signing in Hebrew. So I'm doing it upside down.
And let's start there, because I think a lot of people don't realize that sign language changes from country to country.
So it's very interesting. Amnon knows American Sign Language very well, and I don't. So he'll communicate with people that don't know Hebrew, and he doesn't know English, but they'll meet each other, and they're not necessarily deaf, and he'll communicate with them, which is really amazing. And the other way goes around also, because I know Israeli Sign Language, which is amazing, because the deaf Arabs in Israel and the Jewish deaf people speak the same sign language. So we performed for deaf kids in Nazareth, and I don't know Arabic, and I was signing to them in Israeli Sign Language. We communicated. It was beautiful. It was amazing.
Wow. You were showing us some movements last night that actually in one particular sign, it was very sweet. And in other cultures, it was very sexual. And I thought, oh my goodness. So when you discovered that, when Amnon came home with that was some of these different sign languages from around the globe, and they had this kind of shocking sexual connotation, was it startling for you?
It's very funny, because if Amnon was in the beginning speaking Israeli Sign Language and he was saying, tomorrow we're going to meet, well, this meet in American Sign Language is that word that starts with an F.
Ooh.
And it's not usable, not on the podcast. And so people were, oh, what? Tomorrow we're doing what? Okay. So it's lost in translation, and it's very different. And we were in Russia just before the pandemic, and Amnon said, where's the toilet? And the toilet in Israeli Sign Language is like on your cheek, like a... And in American Sign Language, it's a woman's period. And in Russian Sign Language, it's Moscow. So it was like Amnon's going, where's the bathroom? And all the deaf people are looking at him. What are you talking about, you know?
So speaking of language, and I love that we have Amnon sitting beside you, and it's a podcast. So those that are listening are not hearing him, but he's very much with us in spirit. You were not born doing sign, and you were raised in a family that spoke. So when you started having this relationship with this very handsome, talented man, was it hard to start learning sign language?
I started noticing the past few years I was investigating, because I have friends that know sign language so well and family that have known Amnon for 30 years and don't know sign language at all. So I noticed that people that capture sign language are people that like languages and like movement or dance, and they can catch onto it fast. Or also, when I'm around Amnon sometimes and someone is coming to speak to him, they're sort of relying on me, so their mind isn't so open. But if I'm not there and the mind is a little more open, they can communicate. But Amnon, he speaks Hebrew, but his speech is very unclear because he was born totally deaf and he grew up in an institution and very closed in, and he doesn't hear anything. When you can't hear something, you can't copy it. But today, I think deaf kids, they're taught in a different way. So the communication is not simple for anyone, also for Israelis. And my parents were born in America. I grew up in Israel. And when they met Amnon, it was very difficult for them because my mother was an English teacher in Israel. And my father didn't speak Hebrew well. And they had a very hard time communicating. And when we got married, they were sort of worried. But they both fell in love with Amnon. So that changed very fast.
For a parent, when you say Amnon was institutionalized, that word in America has a connotation of a stigma and being taken away from a family and taken away from society. So in Israel and his native country of Yemen, was he put in an institution as a young child?
So Amnon's parents and his elder brothers were born in Yemen, but Amnon was born in Israel. He's the youngest of five brothers. He has a sister somewhere in the world that was taken at the age of a year. That's a whole other podcast of the Yemen kids that were kidnapped. And his mother was very traumatized when she was told, your son has to be in an institution for the deaf because it was far away. And we have a movie that was made on us called Amnon and Jill. And every time I see this story of Amnon going back to the institution and telling the story how he was left there at the age of five and his mother just walked away, I cry because it's unbelievable for me to understand. And Amnon says that he didn't know that she was leaving. He thought he was coming to play for the day. And the people there told his mother, just walk away, don't say goodbye. And he's telling me this story and he's calling her Ima, Ima, Mommy. And he didn't know that all the kids called their mother Mommy. He thought Ima was her name, you know. And she didn't turn back and she walked. And the whole night he cried because he understood that he's staying there. And for 10 years he stayed at the institution. Saw his parents once a year in the summer vacation, which is not normal. Most of the world tried to combine children that are deaf and hard of hearing in regular schools and to not segregate them. But it wasn't known then, or that was the choice that his mother got, and that's what happened. So we called it Two Worlds because of different dance movements and people connect two worlds to deaf and hearing. But for us originally, it was because Amnon came from the dance world and I did water ballet with the dolphins. And we see that people are very, I don't know, I don't want to stigmatize, but the deaf communities are very closed in, and also in Israel and most places where we go around the world, there's special programs for the deaf and then for dancers that are hearing. And we really want to bring people together and into the real world, not to be segregated.
I love that you want to broaden school and education. And I think in the Freedom Rider world, we're always fighting against segregation. So I want to go back to this five-year-old child without the ability to hear and being left alone without friends and relatives and parents. And what was that like for him when he tells you about those 10 years in the institution? Was it traumatic? Was it a place of growth? What are his memories being separated and segregated from everything he knew?
In general, always when you're a child, you sort of forget fast. But I always remember that day when I was left there. I always remember the atmosphere, like it was very dark for me. I felt like it was the last day for me. When I separated from my family, it was a big crisis for me. I didn't understand why. I cried so much. The next day, I felt like it's a new day, it's a new beginning. And all the kids understood that they're all alone. And we knew that we had to be independent and learn from the beginning. It was very strange for me. It wasn't my home. The institution wasn't only for deaf kids. There were juvenile delinquents. I had to learn a lot about myself. I realized that I'd have to learn every day from people, from the teachers, from the instructors. I felt very closed in. Slowly, I started opening up. Sometimes it was hard for me to talk because I was deaf and I felt like it was dark for me. I understood that I loved art. Art started opening me up. And then when I was 10, I saw a dance program on television from the Bolshoi Ballet, a dance masculine with leaps and pirouettes, and wow, it was amazing. That's what I want to do. I thought, no, how can I do that? Because there's music. I don't know how I can join them to dance. When I was 15, I joined a group. It was a group that we started. They were all deaf dancers. And I became a professional dancer. They also joined hearing dancers. He was the lead dancer there. It was a group called Sound and Silence. And he was the lead dancer there for 15 years.
I'm so moved and so emotional because my interaction with Amnon is he's so vibrant and so emotionally available. And when he greets people, there's a big smile on his face and a warm hug. So I think back to when he wasn't getting that emotional love from others at the institution and how he took what many would call a disability and became so capable and so able, especially in something that requires sound. So, Jill, can you talk about how he does do these beautiful pirouettes and leaps and professionally dances without having the sound?
So the first time I saw Amnon, this is before I knew him, I saw the group because I always loved art and dance. And he was the only one I saw. There were like 15 people on stage. I didn't know who was deaf and who wasn't. And it's just like mesmerizing to see him. And when we started working together, I said, how am I going to dance next to you? And he said, no, you have your own style and I'll have my style and we'll combine them. And I loved that because he didn't want to change anything specifically about me. Just we would learn from each other. When we're dancing, just the two of us, I give him a lot of signals. So they're through eyesight and also through touch. But mostly when he dances on a stage of wood, he feels the vibration. So usually the speakers are on the stage. And then when the music goes on, he can feel the rhythm or the beat from his foot up to his knee. He can feel the vibration. And so he can follow the rhythm. And when he was in that group, I was told that many times the hearing dancers would lose the rhythm and they'd follow Amnon even though he didn't hear because they knew that he kept the rhythm like his heartbeats.
What I love about what you were able to do for the Freedom Rider teachers and for this movement was to bring into our group a young boy who got to meet his hero. His hero was Amnon. And you and Amnon nurtured him to be a contributor for Dear Freedom Rider. And when you brought him into the fold to contribute, we did not know what his story was going to be about. And his story was about being a child who didn't have hearing during the 11-day war between the Gaza Strip and Tel Aviv. So can you talk about finding this beautiful boy, Noam? Can you talk about the writing process? And how specifically, how hard it must be to be deaf when bombs are falling.
So first of all, during this pandemic, you were a ray of light. You always have these amazing ideas and both of us connect to them. And then you came up with this idea that we'd look for students or children to write their stories. And I remembered Noam, and he's now 13 years old. He came to see Amnon when he was 4 years old. He was in a kindergarten for deaf or hard of hearing children, and there was a party, and Amnon and I performed there, and he sat there, and he just looked at Amnon, and his parents told us that he just adored Amnon, and it was important for them to bring Noam to see people like Amnon that have disabilities like him, but it doesn't stop them from doing anything, and he sort of followed us. So every time we performed in his area, his mother would bring him and he came again and again and again. So I thought it would be beautiful that Noam would write his story and Amnon would answer him because Amnon is so optimistic. And Amnon had a very difficult childhood, but he came out of it so strong and knowing himself and seeing himself. So he can't hear, but he's so full of life and energy. But I totally forget about this disability. And Noam started writing his story, and it's scary when you don't hear the sirens. And also, he had to do Zoom for school. Now, even kids that have full hearing, Zoom is so difficult because you're disconnected. And so if you have to read lips and people are with masks, so you're totally Amnon was disconnected all the time. Until people started taking the mask off, he couldn't communicate because most of the world doesn't know sign language. Noam wrote this beautiful story, and it was so exciting. And Amnon and I, during the wartime, we performed in the bomb shelters. And, well, it's Amnon's character not to be hysterical, but We were driving down and there were sirens. I said, Amnon, stop the car. There's sirens. And we had to jump out and lay down on the ground. And Amnon standing there watching the dome, you know, and I'm like, so scary. And then we're in the bomb shelters. And Amnon says that when he was a child and there was a war near Jerusalem and he'd see the bombing, he was afraid. But then he said to himself, you can't be afraid all the time. You have to live.
For our readers that are going to be a global audience, there's a real window into the world of a child in Tel Aviv. There's a window into a world with a child who is hard of hearing. And then there's this response from you and Amnon that comes from a place of, it gets better. There is light. And yes, there may be war, but I think your story is ultimately about peace. So I love that you and Amnon have spent the better part of your life working with both Israelis and Palestinians about just that peace. So can you talk about that message that you have created that is about love and peace?
Both of us believe that every person has a birthright to live in peace. We live in a country of war, and we see that every person deserves to live in peace and enjoy life. We're very sad to see what happened in Syria, what happens on the border of Gaza. Everybody has their story. It's very hard. We want to communicate to those people all around the world that we want peace. And actually, after the big Gaza war a few years ago, I wrote a poem. Part of the poem is in the book. It's called All I Wish Is for a Piece of Peace. And this poem, they brought in Israelis and Palestinians to write their point of view. And I wrote those words, and I really want those words to reach out to as many people as possible, children, people, anyone, to know that we're all accepted. And it's not just words. We really believe in it.
I love this idea of quoting you, I still believe in peace. Because I love that in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of this Dear Freedom Writer project on screens, we would see you and Amnon smiling and signing and actually sometimes singing. We would see Yaman. We would see Raha in Gaza. We would see Becky.
I'm so sad she couldn't come.
I know. And I think what was so hard for us is we had wanted Raha to join us so desperately, and she was not able to get a visa. So the fact that we had this author who had big dreams of joining us, you know, she was with us in spirit and she was with us with the words. But I love in our cocoon of our Zooms that all of you were promoting peace and all of you believe that it's going to get better. So what does it mean to get better? You come from a country where there is division, and you come from a country that you and your husband constantly are fighting for peace.
That's a good question, and I'll ask Amnon in a minute. Because I personally am so optimistic, I never give up believing in peace. And I believe that the basic need of a human being to want peace, because peace is such a beautiful word. In Hebrew, it's shalom. And shalom is peace, hello, and goodbye. So it's everything put together. And I won't give that up, because if I give that up, then there's nothing. I just believe in that. And my brother fought in the Yom Kippur War. It was very scary for us, and a lot of post-trauma. And we work with a lot of people with post-trauma. And we have to find a way to heal. And awful things happen, but there must be unity.
I love that Amnon is so talented in mime, because on the second night we were all together, he asked if any young people would want to join him on the stage and pantomime. And he led them. And it was this spontaneous moment. I think a dozen kids leapt out of their chairs, jumped on the stage, and then performed beside him. And clearly Amnon was the most charismatic of the crew. But I loved watching these kids who a day earlier didn't know each other. And with your husband, they were so uninhibited. And there was just so much joy. And what's that like for you to watch that in both the hearing community and in the deaf community, that kids just love to perform and to be on a stage?
I love that. And when we work with the kids, we always do a show at the end. And it's important for us that it's not competitive, that everybody feels equal, that everybody has their part. And even if someone, and one of our shows, one of the deaf girls who's beautiful, she was suddenly shy to dance. I said, okay, don't dance. So she stood there and she spoke and she told how she feels empowered and how she got so much strength from here. It was amazing. Everybody brings out the best in them. For instance, there was one kid that was deaf. He was pushed to dance and he didn't like to dance. And he said he's not good at anything. And Amnon said to him one day, maybe you're good at something. And so he said, no, nothing. And Amnon said, one thing. And so he said, oh, I like to draw. And he drew robots. Amazing. So Amnon taught him to dance the robot. And he never stopped dancing. It just didn't matter that he was with the rhythm or not. And we put the robot behind him on the screen, and he felt so proud because it was his drawing. And so everybody has something.
I was at that show.
Yeah, you were at
that
show.
I remember sitting in the audience and weeping because it was contagious, the enthusiasm and the magic. And I didn't know the backstory. I just remember seeing Amnon and this kid doing the robot, and there was spontaneous joy.
Yes.
And so now that I know the backstory, it's even more emotional for me.
It's amazing. There's so many things that you don't know about people, and suddenly you bring them out. For instance, there was one kid that he was autistic and also deaf, and he loved to dance, and nobody accepted him. In the deaf world, they didn't accept him because he had autism. In the autism world, he was deaf. So he came to us, and he just danced, and he loved it. And when he started shouting one day, and his assistant said, shh, I said, no, it's perfect. It goes with the dance. He felt so free, and it was so beautiful because we didn't try to change something they had. We added it. And then he wanted to do a solo, but he said he's not good at dance. So what will he do? So we said, what do you like? He said he loved roller skating. So his solo was on the skateboard. So everyone finds something, and then it like opens up and it shines. And it's so fulfilling. I really believe that everybody has something that you can help. And we had a kid from Vietnam, and he was deaf, but he couldn't open his fingers, but he wanted to dance. And then Amnon looked to see what he was good at, and he realized that he has a really good memory. So he can do a follow-up, and he can help others to follow him and what's going in the pantomime in the story. So he was so proud because he was leading suddenly and they were following him and he was in the side all the time. Yeah, he felt like he built it. And Amnon just gave him like that option because he realized that he has a good memory. And then we wanted to join the music. We went to put on music. And so everything sort of worked together. It was exciting.
I love watching Amnon sign because it's a performance. There's so much passion and purpose in his sign. So I want to talk about passion and purpose with the way we describe children. And when we put a label on them like disabled, it's negative. But when I think of Amnon, the label I think of is handicapable. He's not disabled. He's handicapable.
I use the word all abilities.
I love that. All abilities.
I don't know if I made it up, but all abilities. Like,
so how could we encourage educators and parents and society to use labels like handicapable or all abilities?
Just use the word more and more. You know, we wrote some words there that I think we made up, and you make up words, and they start spreading. Like, I remember years ago, I heard Michael Jackson. This is many years ago, so I signed this sign. And sort of spread in Israel. So I think I made that one up. You know, there's words that you can spread, but you can use them. If you use them again and again, then people maybe will move the words that are disabled or move them aside. I feel that there's a lot of overused words, and I think I told you this before, that I feel that people use a lot of words but don't live them or don't work them. You're very unique that everything you say, you just do. It happens. Like, but people inclusive or people use a lot of words, and I don't feel that I see it. I think people have to just do much more and just bring in people. And we have to break these stigmas and open up. So I started saying that when we performed in all the prisons, even I see people for who they are. But like, there was a sound man that was helping us in one prison. And he was very, very scary looking, like his whole face was burnt and he looked like a murderer. And so I asked the warden, I asked her, like, what did he do? Like, he stole a car, you know? I think, this is ridiculous. I put a stigma on him just because the way he looked, I did. And it's sometimes you just don't know.
I think when we think about the laws of attraction, sometimes we attract what we put out. And one of my fondest memories at the Institute and the symposium was watching Amnon, who is deficient in hearing.
He's deaf.
And,
it's okay.
And deaf. I don't know the right word.
It's okay. It's deaf.
But then also standing beside and communicating in a different way with Jasmine, who is sight impaired. She's blind. And the two of them, there was such a connection. And I think for all of us that watched at the Dear Freedom Writer Symposium, someone who was deaf and someone who was blind figuring their own way to communicate. And we all watched in awe.
Yeah, we watched. And I stood far away because I thought that was like a beautiful moment of the communication and how it would work. And I didn't want to come and interpret. There was their communication. And it's very challenging to work for someone who's deaf, to teach someone who's blind and their communication. And they might be speaking different places, you know, and looking different. But it's the world.
With Amnon's senses, what is heightened in a sense? Does he have a greater sense of touch or smell?
So it's interesting. Amnon is very sensitive with smell. And I thought it was because he's deaf till we had a child. And our child is now 31 years old. And he's sensitive just like Amnon for smell. So it has nothing to do with the deafness. The thing is that it's not that deaf people have better eyesight, but they have to use their eyesight. So if we're communicating, you can't look at your phone and communicate like hearing people. You have to look into each other's eyes to communicate.
So my last question is, for other people who are handy capable or all capabilities, what would be something that you could encourage them to overcome something that might be seen by others as a disability or a deficit to actually be their superhero power?
Don't think that disability will stop you in life. Open up. Write your story. Use your arts. Open up to the world. If you think that you're disabled, then you'll stop yourself from going on. Tell your story in a sensitive way and use your feelings and enlighten yourself. And always stay optimistic and open-hearted. Like, this is your present in life. I believe that everybody can accept and be open. I know it's a hard question. I think it's very powerful if you find your way and you always lead. And you can discover yourself. Don't look at yourself and think that you're disabled. Meet people, speak to people, write your story, dance, use your art. That can be a beautiful journey.
I'd like to thank the dynamic duo, Jill and Amnon Dante, for sharing with us the power of harmony and unity. My dear listeners, may we bridge personal and cultural divides. May we look past prejudice and see our common humanity. And in honor of our amazing guest, may we all find ways to promote platforms of peace. That concludes our show this week. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and thank you for being part of our Freedom Writer family. If you'd like to learn more about our new book, Dear Freedom Writer, Stories of Hardship and Hope from the Next Generation, please go to the episode description in your podcast app and click on the links in our show notes. Once again, I'm your host, Erin Gruwell. Until next time, dear listeners, may you write what needs to be written and tell what needs to be told.